Welcome to Unscripted Gaming's TV watch show, Postscripted. Colon. Love is Unscripted.
That title could be shorter.
It could be, but
with Dante from Devil May Cry.
But it's not.
Finally.
It's not going to be, because today we are getting into watching Love is Blind, the illustrious dating show on Netflix. I am Josh, joined by my co-hosts Mike.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hey.
We are going to sit down here now that Ray has actually watched the correct season and episodes.
Current season question mark.
He knows who we're talking about, and we know who he's talking about. We're going to talk about Love is Blind, Season 6, Episode 1 and 2. Forewarning, obviously, we are going to be spoiling things heavily. So if you want to join us for this discussion, make sure that you watch the episodes first. A, so you have context, and B, you don't get spoiled, because things get cooking in these two episodes with Nick and Vanessa Lachey hosting the show, and a bunch of eligible singles from the Charlotte, North Carolina area looking for love, asking the question, Snake, can love bloom even in a 10-foot box in a warehouse?
Okay, so I'm going to get this out of the way and destroy any sort of YouTube monetization we were going to get. My first note is, fuck you, Lachey's. Exclamation point. Just to get that out of the way.
Nick and Vanessa are amazing.
They seem so fake. They seem like the type of person I would avoid at all costs. That's me personally speaking.
They also don't do anything in the show. They're just like, they have like half an hour of work for this entire show. Okay, well, they host the reunion.
So real quick, I think we kind of talked about this in our preseason, primer, but a little bit of context. So I have been watching reality television. I like to say with my wife, but I've been a fan before her. So I've been watching reality television for a long time. Been a Bachelor fan, Bachelorette fan, a lot of stuff like that. Mike has kind of just thrown 2 feet into the pool very recently. Ray doesn't give two shits about anything and any of these people. So we've got a lot of range of emotion and feelings here.
We do have the Survivor history.
We do have the Survivor
history. I want to circle back to that in a bit. Sorry.
But I will say, compared to like The Bachelor, Chris, the old host on that, still was not involved a ton in the moment to moment, but it did feel like he made appearances a little more frequently. Now, I will say, in some of the other shows like The Ultimatum, Nick and Vanessa do take a little more direct role, because there are a few more group meetings and things where they get involved. But yeah, they're really kind of like, they don't really do much until the reunion.
Right. Oh, man, we might have to do The Ultimatum next. Oh, boy. Don't tell Ray about that one. Ray, don't look it up. We got to save that for the next
one. The Ultimatum is so good. Mike, I don't know, Mike or Ray, if you have any thoughts on kind of like, we kick off, obviously, we get a little bit of a montage. We get Nick and Vanessa kind of, talking to the men and the women in their respective quarters, just kind of going over what they're about to do, getting ready for the first set of dates, and really everybody's dressed to the nines, they're ready to go, everybody's really excited, there's a lot of hype. So any thoughts as kind of things kicked off, or anything you wanted to point out from the early part of the show?
Yes, so in our primer episode, Ray, you remember mentioning how a big moment for you was realizing that people on Survivor actually like get food and that they're not starving.
Yeah.
What?
So, ironically enough, Love is Blind, and the production, are being sued, part of the allegations here from a prior participant on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, hey, they just tried to very aggressively, like, get us boozed up to produce, like, you know, compelling reality television and didn't ever, like, feed us to make the booze, like, more effective. So now, in this season, in kind of a response to that, food. Bountiful food everywhere.
I see, yeah.
So, which is a not the way things... is, like, my wife, Sarah, like, is, like, very noticeably is like, oh my god, there's so much food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know, it looks like a regular amount of food to me. But, like, in the absence, compared to, like, previous seasons, the food is, like, blah.
Yeah.
Because ironically, they did not feed people.
Which,
that's amazing.
Unlike Survivor.
Which, I will say, and this is not one of those I'm trying to defend the behavior, but I will say is, like, a pretty common thing that happens in reality television of this style. Like, there's a lot of alcohol and not a lot of food. Like, the Real Housewives are very, very guilty of this. Like, just handing them drinks all the time, not really feeding them much, and getting everybody wasted so that you have really great television. I will say, thankfully, despite the presence of food in this season, there are still plenty of just absolute idiotic drunken moments between the participants of the experiment, and I'm very excited for you guys to see some of those.
I did notice that there were a lot more bagels everywhere during episode 2. It's like, wow, that's an obnoxious amount of carbs just sitting right there. That's amazing. And they actually showed them, like, cooking a meal in episode 1. I was like, hey, I watched the first 2 episodes of the first season. They never showed this. they showed the guys working out, and they showed the women doing yoga, but they never showed them eating. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That doesn't shock me at all. Like, the fact that they were... Because, and I'll just go back to season 1 real quick. They had some healthy wine glasses when they would get into those boxes. They were sitting there like, just put half the bottle in this here glass and I'm going to go try to chat up somebody.
Yeah.
Let me go find me a mate.
I cannot tell you how unironically I want some of those gold wine glasses, cups. Like, and I think it didn't start immediately in season 1, but like it came soon that essentially they started putting those gold glasses for editing purposes because you can't see the amount of liquid in them, so there's no issue with continuity errors. But I unironically want some of those gold wine glasses.
I think this is
the best part, Ray, you'll get to see this soon, is like once they get out of the pods and they go elsewhere, the wine glasses don't go away. So they'll be out in public, and they're still drinking out of these ridiculous gold wine glasses so at, like, funny. A restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina. Just, it's...
Yeah,
it's so good.
Man, I have opinions on... apologies to our listeners in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm going to unload when we get to Charlotte, North Carolina proper, because your city is ugly and unappealing. I am so... It's just... Oh, buddy. Yikes.
Wow.
Anyways, so I guess for like a little table setting before we kind of really dive in here. So for those who don't know, the premise of Love is Blind is young-ish, kind of ready to marry people, basically. So kind of mid-20s is probably the youngest in our group right now.
I think there's the 24, I think, is the youngest participant that at least is featured on the show this season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's someone in their, like, mid-30s on this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got, like, a range of, but still, like, kind of young, but not, like, 20, 21. Like, very, like, post-college, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, bachelors and bachelorettes. Basically do literally blind dating, right? Where they're like go into these rooms where they're like their date is on the other side of the room, and you don't get to see who that person, see what they look like, until you propose, somebody is proposed to get married to, in like 5 weeks, basically, like 1 week for a honeymoon vacation thing, and then 4 weeks living together before like the wedding happens. And only after that proposal is accepted do you get to see that person. That's the first time that happens. So like all of the show is just like all of these different people talking to a bunch of different, kind of doing a bunch of speed dating to try and figure out what is like who they want to date and
who do they have an emotional, deep emotional connection with,
right,
so much that they fall in love. Now I will say, and Ray kind of made this comment about season one, and I don't know if Ray, you felt this, like, yes, in the, like, obviously there are a lot of very attractive people, but there are also a lot of like more like normal looking folks or less than conventionally attractive folks in.
We'll get to this.
Yeah. You know, so they do try and put a good mix together. And I will say in previous seasons and in this one, like you always get your handful of people who try and like, you know, ask their shady questions about like trying to figure out if somebody looks a certain way or, you know, getting a little bit of it. But like people who are really fully, truly diving into the experiment, as they refer to it constantly throughout the show, are trying to avoid that and just build that emotional connection and finding out if they can fall in love with somebody sight unseen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can go into the notes that I have for this. This program.
I guess maybe just to kind of get started here, like, because I'm trying to think like how we want to like go about this, like let's kind of meet the cast, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And get our initial thoughts here. So there's like, is it like 12 and 12 or something? I forget how many, like
it's 12 and 12 really... or 15 and 15, I believe. And they, I want to say at least for this one, you know, they've done a better job of like highlighting mostly people who are going to carry on to the show. Right. You get your randos here and there who are like involved in the experiment but leave or don't get proposed to, or you know, for whatever reason. I think in previous seasons they did a little more of the kind of misdirection of who, you know, you're gonna spend two episodes with this person and they're not gonna get engaged, but like it's a little more,
right, it's pretty focused,
it's focused on at least one of the people in this relationship is going to move on to the rest of the show. So, you know, I don't know if there are any folks that you want to, like, highlight, any favorites. I know Mike has some thoughts on Trevor.
We got to talk about Trevor.
He's so big.
I think Trevor is the first person, the first individual person I have a note about. I just say episode one. Trevor Hare is crazy. The body is crazier. Big meaty claws, like the like Larry from SpongeBob. Like he's an incredibly large man.
He seems like a more like a scaled down version of that dude on TikTok who like holds the can, like the soda can in his hand, and like it looks like a toy, you know, one of the mini cans to him. Like that's who Trevor reminds me of.
And, like, Trevor goes on a bit of a journey, but I was immediately down for Trevor because he seems really nice. He seems like a kind of guy who could be, like, a big, like, kind of dick, but is not because he's nice and is cool, but also could crush my head with his forearms.
Yeah, yeah.
We love our warrior philosopher king, Trevor. Godspeed.
I have notes about Trevor.
Let's hear him. What are your thoughts on?
I think my second note of all of season six, and this is just me like stream of conscious writing this down. Trevor, I hate him already. So I don't know what Mike is getting to.
Why do you hate Trevor? Explain the hate.
That goes into note number 5. Trevor, to quote him, "I want a huge sexual emotional attraction." My note, this is a system where you can't see anyone. How do you get number 2 of the sexual attraction? You're not going to get that.
I did love in that moment when Chelsea just goes, "Are you a nympho?" He's like, no, I just, you know.
Oh, yeah, I have a note about that. That exact conversation. The note says, "Trevor is a fuckboy."
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
So would you call Trevor?
I will say.
I think Trevor's the least fuckboy on here, if you ask me. Okay. Well, maybe not Johnny, but we love Johnny.
We do love Johnny's a fuckboy in a positive way, though, I think, for the most part.
Johnny's a fuckboy, parentheses, non-derogatory.
Yeah, non-derogatory. He's what a fuckboy should have been. I will say, so I did talk, like, so Trevor and Chelsea, one of the early relationships that you get to see, one of the first dates, you know, they seem to have a pretty strong connection. And my first note for them is they start talking, I'm like, these are two basic bitches. Like, they have a good connection, but, like, I was talking to my wife about this. I hate The Notebook. And even when I was young, like, I'm a rom-com fan. I like a good romance. Like, I'm not afraid to admit it. But even then, I was like, The Notebook is so toxic, but it was so popular because it was young Ryan Gosling and blah, blah, blah. But no, The Notebook sucks. And if The Notebook is your favorite romantic movie, that's a big fucking red flag to me personally.
Yeah, that fed into my Trevor is a fuckboy comment. Where it's like,
it's a little too bait to be like,
yeah,
oh,
it's absolutely. It's like asking it to me. It is like the equivalent of saying, "Oh, you like video games? Do you like Sonic the Hedgehog?" It's like, what? You know a video game? Congratulations!
Yeah, that's dude just knows that he should say The Notebook to a woman, and they're gonna think, "Oh, you're in touch with your feelings, and you love Ryan Gosling." Ah ha!
It's actually not that great of a movie.
Terrible. Yeah, it's toxic.
I haven't seen it.
Ryan Gosling's character is an ass. He threatens to commit suicide
to
get somebody to go on
a
date with him who's already on a date. It's fucking terrible. Like,
yeah.
Just say Titanic. You know, that's all you got to do. Just say Titanic.
It's actually worse.
James Cameron the GOAT.
Because the message you get out of the movie The Notebook is like, well, this is clearly the perfect relationship. And it's like, no, this is the... This is a horrific relationship. You would call the cops if someone like this existed.
While we're on the topic,
this to say, the best part about Trevor is that, like, one, he's hot, and also, like, stupid in the right way. We'll talk about stupid in the wrong way.
He's a big dumb boy. Speaking of stupid in the wrong way, Chelsea going on about how she sometimes just goes to the Home Depot looking for a husband. Just boy howdy,
Who amongst us, am I right?
Oh, let's bounce over to Chelsea here. So Chelsea
is a flight attendant.
Flight attendant.
She has a secret that gets revealed a little bit later when we get to the most epic bag fumbler in the world. We'll talk about her reveal, but she's got a little secret that she's hiding. But yeah, Chelsea, she's an interesting bird for sure.
She's like one of our big central characters we're going to carry forward here. So we'll spend a lot of time talking about Chelsea.
Yes, because she gets embroiled in a little bit of a love quartet situation. So
right,
okay.
Maybe we unpack that first, because that's like the big plot. I guess like the big arc of this first. Oh, sorry, Ray, go ahead.
Before we do, I had like two characters I wanted to fire off, like,
oh,
load
uh-huh.
them
let's,
into
let's
the
hear
shotgun. One, Vince, who during his opening said, and this show was killing me, like, slowly inside. I felt some of my neuron synapses, like, detaching as I heard some of the people talking. Vince, who they introduce as a 35-year-old man, admits that he does not know how to do his own laundry. I thought that this is the part
that
where, like,
man is a lawyer.
I thought, like, this is it. Mike is trying to kill me. He is actually trying to murder me. Watch my brain slowly turn into black goo and fall out of my ear. And then there is Jessica. This becomes a major, major, I guess, plot point. But I was just really, really more annoyed with it than anything. Jessica, I have a child, but I can't tell anyone about it. I can't just lead with that fact.
This is, we have to spend a lot of time on this. So we will circle back to Jessica and Jimmy.
I do have a note for Jimmy. My note number, eight. I like Jimmy. Note number 9. Never mind. I don't like Jimmy.
I hate Jimmy.
It was a roller coaster. It was like, Jimmy. I don't know. I can as a character, and then like the kayfabe WrestleMania hit with the middle chair. Nope, never mind. He's
never
a heel.
Never has like, somebody fumbled the bag so epically on television as our dear boy Jimmy.
Wait. What, Jimmy is like, what is it you feel he did?
He's like, he looks like a Celtics fan with like, but like you put a dog brain into a human. That's like, that's the vibe I get from Jimmy.
Golden Retriever just, vibes.
Right. But like, it just, it's, I can't like, I will admit this first, he has a bad time in the pods here. Cause, does that happen? Hold on, I gotta check my.
So first, episode, him or? And I want to say
not yet. It's second episode.
It's the second episode. The first episode, pretty good. Like, you know, he and Jessica hit it off pretty early on. You know, there's an awkward marriage joke right off the bat. She's like, "Oh, you sound like my future husband," and you know they start form a strong connection. I wrote down here that she says something along the lines, "It's crazy that it doesn't sound crazy." I'm like. Sounds a little crazy still, but
this entire show is crazy. Like the concept, the core concept is crazy.
My next note after this, though, during this conversation, because we got Jimmy with Jessica, and she's talking about how immediately they have this connection, and I was like, in big bold letters, why do we think Jimmy has Riz? Like,
I do not understand.
He doesn't have the juice. I don't. Understand it. I don't understand.
I think it's his voice.
Look, desperate times in Charlotte, North Carolina. Things are bad. Things are not good there.
I mean, okay.
As we will see. Imagine being a Panthers fan, right? And then having to go to Love is Blind and find a husband. Imagine that's your life, okay?
I was about to say, when you say desperate times, I think to go on this show, you're at the peak of desperation at a certain point. You know what I mean? And I say that with love and respect, but let's be real here.
Oof.
I got a lot of notes about one specific character. I have way too many notes about this one character.
I mean, personally, I don't know that you have to be desperate. I think I'd thrive on a show like that. I think I'd be pretty good in the pods. Like,
I'm not gonna lie, you'd probably do okay.
I would do all right, and I would do it because I'd be desperate. Just like, hey, I'm single. I've got an opportunity. Let's see if love is blind. Let's do it.
You know how I spent 1 year deployed to Iraq? I would rather spend a year in Afghanistan than go to Love is Blind. Not even joking.
You get to stay in the hotel.
Not even joking.
Talk to people.
Oh my God.
I would never put myself on
that. Go to Mexico for your
blast.
Honeymoon. Like, bro, it would be amazing.
At least I get the combat pay.
You get to like vibe with other boys and like the.
I could do that.
The dude connection. Like, just wait until we get to like some of the later stuff. Like the dude's connection, dudes rock. Like, all we'll say is, dudes rock.
I will say like so. Now that we've kind of talked about like our first love square, which is like Jessica, Jimmy.
Chelsea and Trevor. It's more like it's like a love Z kind of, you know. There's
love Zed.
Love Zed.
We get
our soon after this we get our introduction to Matthew.
Yes, that's how I have the most notes on. This is the most, if anything, proved to me that all this is fake kayfabe. I love the Matthew villain. The Matthew villain is great.
I think is a plant. I'm not gonna lie.
The fact that Matthew is Canadian because he threw way too many ace out there. Like, got your ass. You're
got
definitely
got
coming
him
up north.
Fucking roasted.
when he threw down the notes and says, I got 20 questions here and need you to pick one, I'm like, finally, someone that's taken this serious.
So, because we get the two episodes where we see the full arc, when Love is Blind first came out a couple months ago, I'm in a group chat with Mike's wife, who Mike has now been added to, and another friend, just because we love to talk our reality trash. And one of the friends was talking about how refreshing it was at first to see Matthew. Like, yes, Matthew struggles. Matthew's a bit of a dick, but it was good to see somebody who seems like potentially socially awkward, neurodivergent, not your typical conversator on the show, and like making an effort, because it's good representation. It's good to see somebody
diabolical.
That opinion changed very rapidly, but early on, beginning of the episode, we see Matthew. He's got a list of questions because he's a finance guy, and he's like, hey, pick a number between 1 and 15. I'm going to ask you the question. He asks his date the question, and then she says, what about you? And he goes, I didn't really expect to answer these. And I'm like, bro, what? Like,
I love that line. I took a note of that. I quote, ha, 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 Matthew, I didn't expect questions. I love it. Also, the note right below that, ha, ha, at Matthew just straight up leaving a pod at a bad question. My man, that is great.
So,
dude, the walkout on Sarah Ann was brutal. Like, come on.
Now, this is
your own question.
We'll get into this more in the reunion. I will say, so I've seen the entire season. I've seen the reunion. So watching it again, I'm like trying to watch for stuff, because there is some discourse that happened as like the show aired, where Matthew was like saying, you know, obviously they edited some stuff. I didn't just walk out on her, and Sarah Ann seemed to corroborate that. But they also show Sarah Ann going like, is he gone? Oh, thank God. Like mouthing that, like that she's so happy that he fucking left. So like, yeah, that was, bro was having a rough time out there.
I actually, for a lot of reasons that you guys might not like, I liked how unserious Matthew as even a character was. Let's drop the kayfabe. Let's say he was for real. Let's say this was a real-ass human being and this was him just recognizing it. And I'll break a little bit in episode 2. The fact that he's constantly acknowledging, hey, this is just a stupid epic TV show. I'm actually here trying to find someone. I told my therapist I was going here, and they said that was a bad idea, but I'm going to try it anyways. I'm like, this is the most real person I think on here. I think I relate to him more than anyone else.
That's what you fucking think. That's what they want you to think.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be a C-list celebrity. I'm trying to find somebody I love. Yeah. So then we get into Matt and
you're
AD.
You're like F-list, okay?
Yep. To where we start our next, what we think is initially a love triangle, but we soon learn is also another love Zed. But we've got Matt and AD. They're having a nice little conversation. You know, they're seemingly getting deep. You know, AD seems a little off put at first. She's like, oh, you know, you made an impression, Matthew. And then he starts to really get into it. And, you know, they make a connection. And, you know, AD eventually goes back to the group. And she's like, I had a really nice date with Matthew. And everyone's like, fucking who are you? I'm sorry. There's no way you just said Matthew is the one you had a great time with. Yeah, that's so funny. That fucking loser.
Like, Matthew's getting riffed about in the guy's room too.
Yeah.
He's like walking in there like a fucking ghost, and they're all like, what the fuck is his problem?
I love it. This is why I said I would absolutely Ray, you have a choice. Go on Love is Blind or enlist into the Air Force. Give me the contract.
Oh, buddy.
I wouldn't deal with it. Like I said before, if you told me I had to be in the same room as, like, Trevor or Jimmy for an extended period of time, I give me a wrench and give me an F-15 Strike Eagle. I would rather work on those for the next 6 years or something. But also,
AD seems nice.
AD seems lovely. But speaking of AD, sure. We have to talk about Clay.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I have plenty of notes about Clay.
Oh, Clay.
Clay is like the capital F kind of fuckboy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's got that slick swagger. He has all of the right words to say. He's got that good vocal cadence. You know, he can get on that smooth radio voice and just like, oh.
I almost wish, and I hope he is, I hope Clay is kayfabe. Because what a repugnant human being that we have thrown into this this program, if you will. Here's a couple of my notes. Note about Clay. He doesn't like cats. Well, he does like cats. What he likes about cats is I don't have to love them all the time. I'm like, okay, I think I get what you're trying to say, but that was the most effed up way you could have, like, said that sentence. Also, LOL at Clay just straight up breaking the rules and asking about AD's appearance.
He's like, hey, do you have nice lips? And it's like, Clay, dude. He's so porn brained sometimes.
I love it.
Dude, you gotta like.
I love the audacity.
I will say, though, like, you know, you do sometimes in this show see people really, really trying to like. Go out of their comfort zone, be really self-reflective. And AD is one of those people. She's like, man, you know, Clay is the kind of guy I would always go for and would always break my heart. And I really just like, just can't do that anymore. Like, I need to get outside of that. And then 2 seconds later, she's like, AD all day. Oh, Clay, let's go.
Oh no, AD.
I do have this.
AD, no.
I do have this AD, line for no. AD from episode 2. I'm going to skip down to the AD Clay note I have. AD, I kind of like Clay because I'm such a fix-a-ho for Clay. She wants to take the bad boy and fix him. Like, you know what? No. You deserve him. Absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah, like, I think in the first couple episodes, Clay does go on a bit of an arc. Of like trying to maybe like recognize he wants to not just be like, hey, I'm Clay, I hope you have a nice booty, but the thing is, like, is he just gonna snap back to it the second everything kind of settles down? Like,
it seems like kind of
that's my thought. I don't know.
Seems like a really untrustworthy person, maybe. I mean, if you go on, like, this type of show, and you say, okay, so it's date 2. All right, so I'm taking some notes here. By the way, what do you look like? You know, this thing ain't gonna work out if you're a uggo. You know what I mean? So I got my notes here. Just tell me what you look like. I just have to be attracted to you. Regardless of he tells AD... Regardless of emotional connection, I just have to be attracted to you. I wrote that word for word. I'm like, this is great. This is excellent television.
Like, at a certain point, you appreciate the honesty, but also like,
no,
I do appreciate in that moment AD calling him out and being like, I mean, I feel connected to you, and I could tell you, but like. That's not what we signed up for. That's not right. What we're here for.
Very good.
And I will say, you know, having watched some of the previous seasons, there have been less forward ways of people trying to ask about, you know, people's appearances. Like, somebody was asking in one of the seasons, I think season 4, you know, like, oh, I love to just, like, give a surprise random piggyback ride. Is that something I could do to you? You know, not just, like, saying like, oh,
that's right.
You know how, like, you feel about it. It's like, could I physically pick you up? Like,
right. I remember.
You know,
that.
So. In some ways, like,
that's a good one. I think that's a good one.
It is good,
one.
But like everybody saw through it. There's a part of me that like, okay, I understand that the whole point of the experiment is love blind, and you know. sometimes we prove it, sometimes we don't. I almost appreciate Clay being more direct about it than, like, trying to skirt around it and, like, ask that Michael Scott, could she fit in a robo-style question?
That's a fair point.
So, part of me is like, okay, Clay, that's shitty, and, like, I do appreciate, you know, AD calls him out on it, but I do appreciate him just being, like, direct rather than, you know, hey, could I pick you up, baby?
Right, because, like, that is just kind of worse, because you're, like, thinking you're trying to get a fast
100%.
One. I have a note here that just says, all caps, look at the milks. What does that mean?
The milks?
Look at the milks.
Why
were they drinking? Were they drinking milk and you noticed it?
I think so. Why did I put this down? This is going to be another running plot of this podcast.
What we'll do is
deciphering my contemporaneous notes.
We'll pin a comment on the YouTube video with Mike responding to himself about what he was talking about with the milks, because I have no idea what we're talking about here.
I'm just gonna have to watch this again.
Yeah,
like, look at the milks.
I did.
Also, the music is hilarious.
I actually wrote that.
I haven't noticed it.
I wrote down, this note is for Mike. The music in this show is rancid.
It rocks. It's so incredibly literal. I think I started in like episode 3. I start writing down my favorite lyrics that we get every now and then, just to keep us abreast of the music situation.
I know people that probably use some
things. Yeah, we get to meet Johnny and Amy. Like, they're having a really great vibe. I think we'll have more to say about them towards the end of episode 2, because they build a connection so early, and there's no love triangle there. Like, Johnny and Amy are locked in on each other. You know, they talk about
Amy and Johnny save us.
Yeah, they get pretty deep in episode 1 and 2. Like, they talk about family issues. Like, you know, they get into some
stuff
there.
Like, good conversations.
Yeah. My next note that I had was about Jimmy having a spicy wing, and I did relate to that pretty deeply. Of like, oh, it's probably not that spicy, but I got the baby mouth. And him blowing his nose and Jessica, like, giving him the weird side-eye through the wall.
The Jessica side-eye profile is so... Oh, my God.
I wish I could frame...
She's got, like, the perfect face.
I want that framed on my wall. Just, like, that is modern art right there.
She's so sassy. I love her.
I have a note for Jessica.
Yep. Yeah.
Please get therapy.
This is kind of what I wanted to get to, because this is kind of the big first. This is kind of the other big thing other than, like, the stinger of this episode, which we will obviously get to. But, like, Jimmy's very bad day in the pod. because he, him
Jimmy,
and Jessica
Jimmy,
the whole
Jimmy
time,
had, Jimmy had a longest yard style day.
Right. He, like, the SpongeBob. Like, Johnny's like chatting with Amy about anime, and he's like SpongeBob in the Silent Hill hallway. That's freaking what he's going through.
Operation Market, like, Garden for Jimmy. Just like, and then when he gets up, gets knocked out,
like,
again.
Because Jimmy, this is why I fucking hate Jimmy, and I hope he suffers. It's because he's so into Jessica. He's really into it. They're feeling it. This is clicking.
The vibes are good.
And she's like, hey, I should probably let you know, because we're building this good connection, that, like, I have a 10-year-old daughter, which is, like, you know, like, obviously, if you do the math, like, she had her kind of on the younger side, but, like, is still here and, like, still a person. And you can see Jimmy immediately doing the calculus of, like, how do I back out of this the nicest way I possibly can without trying to not, like, he's like,
So I wrote this down watching it, I mean, I had a very visceral reaction to this moment the first time watching it, but watching it back again with all the knowledge I have of like what happens this season, what happens in the reunion, all that jazz, like you go from Jimmy opening up, talking about his family, talking about being poor, talking about people judging his family and judging his upbringing and being a first generation college, like he is opening up. And Jessica is like deeply, deeply supporting him, just being like, you know what? Yes, like you're amazing. Your family is wonderful. I would love your family. Like that adversity is incredible. Like it's shitty that people treated you that way. Yada, yada, yada. Like deep, 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 deep support for Jimmy, who doesn't have any Riz. And then Jimmy, in return, gets another like deep thing from Jessica, and he goes, wow, you have a kid. And he says, why didn't you tell me that earlier? Like, that's the first thing he says after she says, I didn't want to tell you this right off the bat because I didn't want to, like, to focus on it, but it is something I have to say before we continue on. And he's like, wow, why didn't you tell me earlier? Like, the most epic bag fumble in the fucking planet. Like, oh,
hold up. That's what you call the bag fumble? I have this as a note. I say, like, wait, that's a fair question to ask.
I think that is a
life changing. That is a commitment. That's more than like, okay.
Marriage is a commitment.
Like, she mentions it.
Yeah, she mentions it on like date. What is this?
Their second or third date.
It's like one of those things. Like, oh, by the way, should probably get this out there. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an equivalent. I don't know if there is an equivalent to that. Now that I think about it, like it is something that you have to say when you start dating someone. By the way, I'm a mother, or by the way, I'm a father, a single father, single mother, or something like that. I get where he's coming from. I thought that was a fair question to ask, especially like right in the moment.
I think that's a fair assessment, Ray. I think the problem is that Jimmy is Jimmy, and as we will learn, Jimmy has the emotional intelligence of a Celtics fan and a dog that has been put into a human body for 24 hours. And just like he just cannot respond. This is a running thread. He just cannot respond to the emotional challenges and questions being presented to him in a way that feels like satisfying, or like from a place that isn't just like, oh shit, I gotta backpedal out of this, oh fuck, I'm on TV, what do I do, because that's what it read like to me. And I just like, you could see it all crumbles down from there. But he'll never admit it, that like he'll never just come out and say like, you having a 10-year-old daughter was a deal breaker for me. Like he's never going to admit that.
I think that's the thing of like having like the cameras on you and knowing that there is a little bit of falseness to all this. Because yeah, if you went on a third date with someone and on the third date they just kind of drop the hammer of BT dubs, I have a school age child. Like, oh, this is something I wish you brought up to the fore. I know more about your favorite food than I knew about that.
And, you know, so my oldest child is 7.5. I have not dated in a long time. I also have 3 kids, so it's a little different for me. But, like, I do think that there is some grace that is due to Jessica in this moment of, like, it is a unique dating situation. You are getting very condensed, but also a lot of like one-on-one time together. And a 10-year-old, like when you have the father very involved,
got that stuff figured out, right?
Like they're pretty independent. Like, yes, you are going to be a stepfather or a stepmother to this child, but like they're almost in middle school. They don't need their diapers changed. Like, it's not like,
right?
You could very easily
10-year-old is different than like a 2.5-year-old.
And there are lots of step-parents who are respected by their stepchildren, but like when the parents are very good co-parents, it's like, hey, mom and dad are the primaries here. Like, you know, sometimes we call you in when we need to because, like, you're around. But, like, your parenting of this child is very limited because you're my husband, not their parent. So, like, in the modern dating context, in the way that people do things, I don't think it is as unusual for somebody to, like, maybe not necessarily talk about the kid right away, especially because there is so many assumptions and baggage put on single mothers as used right. goods in our fucking ridiculous patriarchal society. Like, I don't blame Jessica for not, like, opening up right about that.
Not being also, like, hi, my name is Jessica. I have a 10-year-old daughter.
Because, it's kind of, like she says, like, it doesn't... It's a big part of her life, but it doesn't define her. But the second you say you're a mom in this country, that's all people can see you as. They don't see you as a potential sexual partner. They see you as a mom and a burden to their life.
I feel like... No, okay. Someone that has dated recently, like me and Anna got married 2 years ago. If you go to any dating profile, that's typically front and center, my guys. And, you know, you make the decision from there. Or, like, it comes up on the first date. It just does. And it's weird if it doesn't. Now, Jessica's in this weird situation where she has... And this is... I want to give her grace, but she's kind of put herself into this situation, like, purposely. Of, like, yeah, I'm going to do this very, very awkward dating thing where no one really gets to really know me visually. We're just kind of, like, boom, 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 dating. And I'm going to hide this nuclear bomb of information. And when it blows up, it's... As someone that every time on this show, and I took a note about that, Jess keeps crying about her child. Dear God, she clearly misses her. Someone please get this woman therapy. She is clearly not okay. This is not okay.
I think our biggest go to therapy, it's a rude thing to say, like, hey, go to therapy. A little bit, but I think it's just to kind of transition out of this discussion because, like, I think there's validity to both part, kind of both aspects. Like,
yeah.
But, like, I personally think Jimmy had a really bad reaction here.
I don't think it was great.
Jessica
no.
feels it that way. Feels that way.
1,000,000,000%. I can't say too much because
Chelsea Jimmy.
I am clouded by the knowledge of what transpires in the rest of the show, so I have to tamp my discussion a little bit as if I'd only watched episode 1 and 2. But then Jimmy goes from this date to a date with Chelsea where she reveals that she has in fact previously been married.
Yep.
And boy howdy does Jimmy not respond well to Jimmy's this, like, reveal, okay, either.
Everything sucks for me.
He kind of freezes up. Yeah.
And Which is why I say Jimmy fumbles the bag so hard because, like, he's built a connection with two wonderful women and they both open up to him and he both shits right on their chests. Just like,
oh my Lord! What the hell?
In, like, okay, the worst way possible, like, I am not here for either of you women. And
first Mike with the milk, and now Josh with the Cleveland steamer. What is wrong with you two?
This is also why I don't understand why anybody thinks Jimmy has the riz, because when the going gets tough, Jimmy gets going, and they both still want him, and I don't understand.
Like, Jimmy is just... I can't begin to describe how much I despise Jimmy and his just complete lack of, like, again, we'll get to some really juicy Jimmy stuff, but again, the 10-year-old daughter is one thing, but, like, hey, I was married before.
Yeah, isn't she?
Is comparatively, I think, in my opinion, a less kind of life-altering, like, big thing that you need to know.
Yeah.
And again, like, Jimmy has, like, the terrible reaction. And then, obviously, like, Chelsea is someone who's very, like... Chelsea probably needs a little too much external validation.
Mm-hmm.
Is something I pick up on very early on.
That is a spoiler I'll give you for the rest of the season. Yes. Chelsea needs the most external validation. If there's somebody who needs therapy, it's Chelsea. But What I always love about any reality television, we got our first good cry, baby. Number one, right off the bat, let's go.
Wait, what? First good... Oh, you're talking about...
Chelsea cries because of this, just like... Big, just Jimmy doesn't care about me. Oh,
oh my goodness.
That's what I watch reality television for. Episode one, we get the first one. It's amazing.
I actually don't have a lot of notes about Jimmy because I found like most of the stuff they're just like, this is just... I didn't take a ton of notes on his reactions because I felt like, hey, there's a certain point where I don't... Obviously, I'm not in love with this particular show. This entire thing of us watching it is like for the bit. But I feel like
it's not a bit.
This was exploitative at a certain point. Like, no, I know it's not a bit. We're obviously watching it. But yeah, this particular part felt like, oh gosh, geez. I feel like we're watching someone like having a serious moment. And I hope someone talks to them. Like, when I say please seek therapy, I mean legitimately like, I hope that you have a good counselor, and I hope you get these feelings out, not on Netflix. Legitimately. But yes, we got to hear
We're almost to the episode end of episode one here. So,
oh, I'm on episode two. Where are you at?
So, real quick, we're wrapping up here with our little love Zed here. So, Chelsea has her bag fumbled by Jimmy. She goes to talk to Trevor. Trevor handles it much better. He makes a joke, but you can tell, like, you can see that Chelsea is not as present as she should be to, like, the way that Trevor is handling her because she's mm-hmm. so upset about Jimmy. Like, Trevor's making jokes and he's, like, trying to ask her questions, and you can just see that she's a million miles elsewhere. She does start to engage in the conversation. She asks about, you know, him ever getting close. Like, he asks her if she's was ever close to getting married, and she's like, oh, I was married. He's like, so would you say that was close? Like, he's funny about it, whatever.
That was a fun bit, yeah.
That's good.
She asked him if he was ever close to getting married. He says, the last girl that I was with, I thought I was going to marry, but I didn't. Just remember that. Just remember that moment. Okay. Jimmy and Amy, Johnny and Amy, cue together. The last thing, episode one, Matthew, we get a little bit of more time with AD. They have a lovely date. They build a connection, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm talking about asking the dad, and hey, you know what? I could come pick you up. We could run away together. I'm like, oh my God, that's so sweet.
You get a fast car, you know.
Then AD goes back to the group room, and she talks to a friend. And here's her say how Matthew talked about coming to pick up the friend and take her home away from this experiment.
Amber, but yeah, he drops the exact
same line. And AD, the last thing I wrote was like, AD, fix your face. Because like, boy, her gabbers were flaccid in that moment. Oh my God.
And it's just, this is the magic, right? It's like they kind of build up Matthew as like the kind of episode one villain. Give him like,
you know, the potentially neurodivergent, you know, lovable, affable idiot who's like, he doesn't really know how to do social, but like he might find love. And then you find out, oh, he is playing two women with the exact same playbook.
What a dog. What a killer.
I have this note here. LOL, the Matthew villain arc.
The edit is truly diabolical. Like,
yeah, the edit of like, dun dun, they're playing the music, and he's just drinking the wine by himself over off in the corner. It's like, yeah, whatever.
I love how the second episode starts with like the web of lies being revealed, and the other guys are like, what's this fucking deal? The big kind of arc of episode two is like Amber and AD getting together to like check the notes, and then to kind of jump back to them, like AD and Clay have a date that's going pretty well. You can kind of start to see like Clay like trying to, I said I liked his sweatshirt here.
It is a good sweatshirt.
Uh, Clay's like maybe doing a little bit better, but then finds out that like AD's been dating Matthew, and he goes ballistic.
Clay does not handle that news well at all.
My note for this is Clay being dissed for Matthew is hilarious. This is excellent kayfabe.
It's so good.
I will say, especially seeing the way that the dudes vibe with Matthew in the room together and the way they all act, I'm not a very jealous person, but if it were revealed that I was up against Matthew for somebody's attention, I'd be probably pretty pissed too. So I can't fault Clay too much. I'm not going to say that he handles it well, but I also get it. Like, bro, Matthew, of all people, that's the one you're also vibing with? Like, I'm sorry, who are you?
No,
yeah, they're
no.
So different.
Josh, you just need to recognize a player stronger than you, all right? Recognize the game.
Game recognize game, right?
You got to bring the binder.
That's your problem. He's over there while you're over there scheming and planning. He's over there playing nose to the grindstone.
Moisturized, thriving. Love his spreadsheets.
Asking questions he can't answer.
What are you doing over there, Clay? Putting on a fake-ass radio voice and getting dissed.
I think, is this the Jeremy CPAP reveal, or is that,
what the hell are you talking about?
Is that later? Is that in the next episode?
It might be a little later, but we do get introduced to a couple, love interests that we didn't get introduced into episode one. Key among them is Jeremy and Laura. They were not featured in episode one. They are in episode two. We get some time with...
I love Laura.
Laura is great.
We love Laura.
And we get Jeremy with Sarah Ann as well a little bit in that episode. I will say I do love AD confronting Matthew and just being like, listen, bro. The shit you Dynamite. Said to me, I heard from somebody else saying the exact same line. Tell me about that.
I like Matthew's response because I took a note here. Matthew just looks dead at the wall, the separation wall, and says, you've been talking to Amber, haven't you? I giggle.
Just like, Matthew do be Gendo posing.
He do! I love the Matthew villain arc. I think this is great. This is the best thing on the show so far. Just like a guy playing all the corners. He's got the spreadsheets. He's got the questions.
I will mathematically secure a wife.
He doesn't even talk to the other guys. He's like, you're not in my periphery. He walks over, gets like a thing of water, walks away. He's like, Matthew, here's your notebook. Walks over, takes it.
It's like Sigma.
He's not
here
to make friends. He's here to find a wife. Like, why would he talk to these dudes?
Hyper Sigma male energy.
Oh my God.
Nightmare.
So after that, we also get introduced to Kenneth and Brittany. We see Kenneth in the first episode, 25-year-old school principal, immediate
speak
red
on
flag.
This, please. Speak on this.
But
that's weird.
So weird because like,
why is that weird?
He's 25 years. At 25 years old, you do not have the life experience or even the job experience to run a whole educational institution. You just don't.
You're not smart enough.
You're not experienced enough. You don't have enough of the enterprise. Like you're not ready.
Josh trying to keep a black man down. That's what he's doing.
Wow!
Josh out here saying DEI against Kenneth. I'm not standing for it.
I mean, okay, I can't say that. Never mind. But like,
wow.
To my wife,
who is going to listen to this later. I was trying to. I guess I am. I need to disrupt the deficit narrative.
much to consider, folks. We're working and learning and growing.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, like, you know, that's to become a principal. It's like how much time did you spend in a classroom before becoming a principal? You know, like 25 is like How much time could you have feasibly spent in
at
a classroom?
At most, you could have been an active classroom teacher for 3 years. That is not enough. That's not enough to be an administrator of a whole ass building. And if I need to bring my educator wife, who has her master's, onto this program to tell you why no 25-year-old, regardless of race, Ray, is qualified to be a administrator of an entire ass building.
So consider this. I'm just going to throw this off. I'm going to swish this in your glass, swish it in your mouth. Tell me what it tastes like. What if he's the principal of a low-income school and no one else was taking the job? He was the only one.
What if it's like a shitty building, Josh? You ever think about that?
Yeah.
Huh? Is that what you were saying? Huh?
I'm saying like weirder things have happened.
If I'm going to push back and say I'm pretty sure he is the principal of a charter school, because it is unlikely that even a low-income school would hire somebody of his age, because there are plenty of administrators with the proper education and certification to hire for the most part in the world.
I wish Kenneth was here. It's like, you're starting to disqualify me for a job I have.
And I would imagine that his is not a federally recognized, like,
for getting canceled first.
Yeah, me. Right. I hate black excellence. Like, it just, it's right. You heard it here first. Obviously, that's what I'm saying with this conversation.
I have, like, problems with this show on the fundamental level. Josh has problems with people's individual jobs. He's like, what the F you mean you're a school principal? So out of pocket!
I would say the same thing if he was white. I don't know if that helps.
Josh says, I hate all principals equally.
I don't see race of principals. I just see their age. And 25 is not old enough.
Look, this is, yeah, maybe.
Everybody with a kente cloth hat just goes looking at Josh like.
Look, maybe you just need to be a little bit
My name
older.
Is Paul Atreides Mordeep.
I have your permanent record. It's a Doom podcast, everybody.
Wow.
You got pranked. You thought we were doing Love is Blind. No, it's a Doom pod.
Thank God. Okay,
so Kenneth and Brittany.
Kenneth the real side.
My main thing is also weird church vibe. Like,
yeah, very churchy.
They're very churchy.
All right.
After that, I had, Johnny and Amy. We got our first I love you. Johnny literally, can't contain himself. He's just like, I love
save
you.
Us,
and she's
Amy,
like,
Johnny.
Oh, I love you too.
Amy's so cute. Johnny's a king. He's a little short king. We love Amy, Johnny, if you can hear us.
After that, I wrote Jimmy, ...
I do have a note about Johnny. Johnny singing Three Kings was very cute.
That was. We got our first proposal, episode 2. We got our first proposal. Johnny proposes to Amy. Johnny, she says yes. It's amazing. God. Then we go back. So we go back to our... Matthew
Jimmy
and
Chelsea.
AD.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
I have a Jimmy Chelsea. No, because this is, again, another, I think, key thing for Jimmy going forward. Because, again, he's still actively trying to backpedal out of the Jess conversations. And, like, I don't think we get a really direct follow-up on that in this episode. But, like, the walk back is still happening very slowly here. And especially because he goes fucking cartoon wolf, like honk honk a wooga, when Chelsea says, sometimes people said I look like Megan Fox. Which is like, again, like, you
was that,
don't
okay.
set yourself up like that.
So
don't
I was doing a quick and dirty rewatch. Is this in episode 2's where she says that?
Yes.
Man, you can see I do, like, I didn't see this moment on the rewatch because I was watching, like, I watched it at lunch break. I was going 1.5. I was just like scrubbing through to like remind myself what happened in this, and I must have overlooked that part, but I still remember the look on Jimmy's face, and it's exactly what Mike said. Like, he does the honk honk awooga like smile of just like, oh my god, Megan Fox, I watched her Transformers when I was a kid. Oh my god.
Ray can't raise beside himself.
I took no notes on that. I said, nah, I'm not even gonna dignify that.
Just like, again, like, it kind of, not to like armchair diagnose, but that's what we're doing here, obviously, duh. Mm-hmm. Move aside, folks, if you have a conscience. But like, not to diagnose here, but if you have concerns about like wanting like people being attracted to you, like this is a weird thing to throw out there. I honestly kind of see it. Like, I kind of see like the eyes a mm-hmm. little bit.
Yeah,
I see where I see why someone would say that. I would not repeat that.
So I will say, you know? I can't remember who, and this is a mild spoiler, but it doesn't. Chelsea has a moment later on where somebody else says a celebrity, you know, lookalike that to my mind makes way more sense. And she should have said that. It's still okay. Definitely leading the witness, but it is not Megan Fox in Transformers for a millennial level leading the witness.
That is a... Yeah, I purposely did not take notes on that. I'm like, no, moving on.
So the episode does end strong, though. So we go back to AD and Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Amber left. She was like, I don't appreciate what has happened, and I am gone. And AD calls out Matthew about it.
That's not
and
what happens.
Matthew tries to like sort of backpedal and talk around it, but AD seems to.
America loves an underdog.
America
Fuck
loves,
off.
And he even says
Fuck
America.
You. We
he
hate
says
underdogs.
The words
they
America.
Suck.
I said I wrote here, America watching. LOL. Like, get fucked, Matthew. You pretentious prick. Like,
yeah. Look at the Team USA basketball roster and tell me you love underdogs, dick.
God. Oh my god. But. She calls him out. He tries to backpedal, and she's like, she is not having it. And Matthew says, it's over. He goes back to the room, and then he mutters to himself, I'm going after Amber. And he's gone.
Yeah, and then I wrote a note here. The Matthew evil arc completes.
That's when we got the text from the friend who was like, oh, never mind, we're not getting neurodivergent representation. We're just getting another asshole who was moonlighting as a neurodivergent person. But then we get our first meeting of season 6. We get to see Johnny and Amy see each other for the first time. They are both legitimately thrilled.
I have to stop you right there, since I just watched it. That actually doesn't happen at the end of episode 2. They tease it.
I think
it.
That's
okay. Yeah.
Well, that's me scrubbing through again. So we get the tease of their meeting. Spoiler alert, it's pretty fucking cute.
Okay. I have one note here I took at the end of like when AD was walking away and she said, be so fucking real for real right now. And my note says, did you forget what show you were on? Kind of like, yeah, this happens. This is season 6 of this type of show. How did you not know this was going to happen? Did you think you were immune to it? Were you the special child? Guess not.
I've thought about this
sure.
a lot, actually, because...
all right.
No. It's like, I've been watching The Bachelor... and The Bachelorette for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been watching Love is Blind since season 1. Mm-hmm. And you do have that moment of like, okay, you're on a late season of a dating show. You've had the ability to watch every episode and how things go from the beginning. And there is a season of Love is Blind where, like, somebody got on the show in a later season but, like, purposefully didn't watch anything about it. I think it's Clay, actually, if I remember correctly. I, like, knew of the show but wasn't familiar with the content of it. And I do think that there is some level of preparation that you can do knowing the show, knowing things. And, like, you even see this in Survivor. Like, there was somebody a few years ago who got really far because they were so entranced in the Survivor world that they, like, they knew how the games work, they knew the strategy. But, like, when you actually get into that room, when you are in the moment, when you are feeling emotion, like, it doesn't matter how logically you think about it, when you get down to, like, human emotions of, like, I am falling in love with someone actively, like, a lot of that logic and reasoning goes out the window, or you struggle to remember, like, I am on a television show, because you were just, like, you were in the moment, you were in that conversation, you were in that relationship, or that love triangle, or that love Zed, like, whatever you want to call it. Like, I don't think that any human being could potentially prepare themselves enough with as much knowledge of how the show works. When you get into that room and conversations start happening and you're talking for hours and feelings start to build, like, I just don't think it's possible, as much as you prepare yourself in advance, to be ready for the way you feel once the feelings start flying.
Yeah, like, produced honesty and produced connection is still honesty and a connection. And it still hurts when that produced reality TV trust is seemingly broken, which is what happened in the AD Matthew thing. So I'm trying to think if I had any other last minute notes on.
I have one last note, so maybe you can end on a high. Two. You can end on probably a high note, Mike. My note that I took is it's kind of a sad one, because I was watching towards, like, the end, and it was when AD was doing her walk, and she was crying to the other girls, and the one girl said, "I'm a Beyonce." I just had this feeling in this show where I'm like, I feel like this show is sending also a toxic message. So this is my kind of a bummer note. And maybe it's too much of a bummer, but I do want to note it because I think it's important. Some people die single and they're happy about it. And I feel this show will never acknowledge that. And I admit that kind of angers me. Like, it's a horrifically toxic message I think this show will never acknowledge. It's more like, no, you need to date and get married as fast as effing possible. And it's like, what if you're just cool vibing?
Well, then you're not going to be on the show. You're not going to watch the show. Like, I will say, like, yeah, you can be happy single, but, like, we're social creatures. We are literally intrinsically, like, motivated by centuries of programming to, like, try and be a mate. I'm not saying that, like, you can't be aberrant and not want that, or, like, it's weird for somebody to, like, nah, I'm good on my own, because, like, also there are a lot of trash people out here and people have bad experiences and sometimes they find their happiness on their own. I'm not gonna say that, but, like, most people want to find a partner, most people want a person to be with, and, like, most people get excited when they find that person that they've been looking for a long time. Like, and also, a dating show is just not where you acknowledge, like, single culture. Like, that's just not
Sigma
where you...
That's not what this show's about.
Like, why would they acknowledge that? Because, like, that's not the fucking point.
Like, no, it's just a thing of why I don't watch, like, reality dating shows like this, because I feel like the human experience is kind of super muddled and distorted, and it makes me feel not great. But that's my negative point. That's why I said, Mike, before you get to yours, you probably will end on a high note.
I do have a high note for us.
Go for it.
I think, like, I like how so far in the season you see, like a lot of the women in the like the men kind of are generally like pretty supportive and like talking. I like that. I like those scenes that we get with like everybody kind of chatting and like sharing notes and just talking. I think it's nice. Like in the past, I think it's been a little bit more like snipey sometimes. The high note though, I do think the women should get to do a majority vote to kill one man. I think, you know,
it would have been Matthew.
They gotta have quorum, so it can't just be like, oh, three people voted to kill one person, he's gone. So you gotta have like a good majority. You gotta get a good majority of people. But like, if, you know, if we're talking like 12 people, if like 7 to 8 people think you should die in the pods, like, you might deserve it. I don't know. Just food for thought, Netflix. Well, folks, I think that's probably a good kind of stopping point here.
Yeah, so
we've got some good arcs.
We've met most of the characters that are going to be on our radar moving forward. You know, the relationship dynamics have been set, and now we just need to move on to some more of the decisions and proposals, and then the setting of the honeymoon. So episodes 3 and 4 coming up, and you can find those here on unscriptedgaming.com. There you can find links to all of our media presence across the internet. You can find our socials on Facebook at Unscripted Game Podcast. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at unscript_gaming. You can find us on soundcloud.com/unscripted-gaming. There you can find our audio versions of the podcast. We're on all the major podcatchers. Google, Apple, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, all those. And then you can find our video version of the podcast on YouTube. Thank you for listening to Unscripted Gaming, Postscripted. Love is unscripted. My name is Josh.
My name is Mike. Good job. That was great.
My name is Ray.
I didn't even have to see that. I just did it from memory. Peace!